Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today our topic, I wanted to lay out an Italian wine primer. And then Cindy was like, okay, great.
Definitely.
So then I started writing the notes.
and they got longer.
It just became impossible. It just became...
It's too much to do the whole country at once.
Exactly right. So I'm going to try to stick to the north today.
I like the north.
And
a lot.
Cindy's going to try to keep me on track, make sure I fill people in on, like, what grapes are what, and...
Yes, I will ask the everyday person questions.
Remind people what pasta not to miss and which place, and
lots of great food.
There is, and a lot of interesting cooking, and not always the cooking we think of when we think of Italian food in the States, because so much emigration was from the South into the States. So you think of a few of the wines are really popular in the U.S., but at least the names you think of, Barolo, you think of Amarone di Valpolicella, you know, you think of a few things, Suave, Prosecco. These are all things from the north, from different regions, but the funny thing is all of those things are not grape names. For an American wine drinker, We think of grape names first.
Right.
Isn't that what you...
Sure, absolutely.
Before exposure to a lot of European wines.
Mm-hmm.
But European wines are all organized by place, and the traditions of growing certain grapes happens in certain places. So let's say those four famous wines from the north that we know pretty well in the States. The funny thing is, okay, take Prosecco and kind of toss it out. Prosecco is the grape.
Right.
And there are several places that grow better Prosecco than other Proseccos. But that's the one where 30 years ago, they said, you know what, we wanted this to do well in the U.S. and the U.K. Those are the guys that they like the grape name to be apparent. We're going to make the place less important. And Prosecco can be grown in a lot of places in the Veneto and across the north. But those other three, Barolo is the name of a town, and it's the name of a zone. And the zone has 11 villages in it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely used to think Barolo was a grape. I never realized it was a region.
People do.
Mm-hmm.
And just as an example, that Barolo is one town surrounded by these other 10 towns, and the vineyards that are all around them are zoned for wines that are known as Barolo. So... Monforte d'Alba, the best vineyards around there, grow Barolo. The grape that goes into Barolo is Nebbiolo. And if you're going to call it the name of that place, the name that they're proud of, you have to grow this particular grape. There are other vineyards in that same zone that grow other grapes that we know a bit. Barbera, Dolcetto, Fresa, that's a basic, like, you have to take the idea of knowing things only by grape names and tossing them out.
So when you look at the label, what's going to be prominent on the label then?
What should be prominent on the label is Barolo.
Okay.
You know,
so the region.
It should say that, well, the DOCG. There's a system, just like in France, there's an AOC. The Italians, of course, made it more complicated with a million different exceptions. And we're talking about just the north. So we'll start in the northwest and work across to the east. And the biggest region in the northwest, and what a lot of Italians would say is the most important, quote-unquote, region of Italy for wine growing for a bunch of different reasons, is Piemonte. In Piemonte, if you want to locate it, look for Turin. Look for Torino, where the Olympics was. Or think of the Shroud of Turin, but
that should be fresh in people's minds.
Yeah, they're like facing the foothills of the Alps and bordering France, bordering Switzerland to the north.
It's such a beautiful region, and you talked about Monforte Alba. When we stayed there, we've been there a couple of times on work trips, and to stay in the top of the village and just look across the valley floor and see the Alps off in the distance, it is remarkably beautiful. I think it's one of the prettiest places I've ever been.
It is beautiful. But Piemonte literally means the foot of the mountains, and so north of that zone, that Barolo zone, and just north of that is Barbaresco, which is. That's confusing again, right?
Mm-hmm. Because
the names are similar, and they're both place names. But the grape they grow to be proud of is, again, Nebbiolo. So if you want to call it Barbaresco, it's likely from one of three towns, or the vineyards around three towns, and will be grown with 100% Nebbiolo. So the parallel, if you watch French wine, you pay attention to French wine, the best parallel probably is Burgundy. Because the same grape is grown again and again in Burgundy. It's Pinot Noir for reds. Whites are not the same in Piemonte, but it's Pinot Noir for reds. In Piemonte, it's Nebbiolo for reds. And these towns and the areas around them, the big area of Barolo with all the towns in it, the smaller area of Barbaresco with the three towns in it, and then smaller towns to the north that grow Nebbiolo as well, like Gattinara, Spana, Lessona, the area around Cantalupo, Gemme. These areas all grow Nebbiolo as well, and they're all different expressions of Nebbiolo. Just like in Burgundy, Chambon Musigny is very different from Volnay, even though it's Pinot Noir for both.
When you say expressions, how do they differ from region to region, if you can?
So say, okay, let's take three. So Barolo, further south, and pick one of the villages that makes more robust wines. So south in the south is Serra Lunga d'Alba. And Serra Lunga d'Alba has a very particular mineral content to the soil and makes these big tannic mineral, full-bodied, well-structured, meaning high acidity, high tannin, but there's very ripe fruit, and it's very dark fruit and a very dried fruit expression, dried cherries. A lot of the aromatics can run rose petals, they can run cinnamon, a lot of anise, star anise. On the palate, you get something that can be sort of sweet leathery, but it's palate drying, which you think of as a dry red wine. Barolo is a textbook version of, and one from Serra Lunga d'Alba is like a fresh, palate drying, beefy red wine that takes a bit of time in the cellar to melt away some of those tannins so that the wine can be a little bit softer and a little bit more appreciable. And then you begin to get more secondary aromas and flavors, rose petals, more spices. Some of the charm of the fruit comes out of the wine, and some of the sort of like iron case that it's in for structure has melted away a little bit. That is Nebbiolo from there. In Barbaresco, let's say, one of the great vineyards are Moncagata. Moncagata is Nebbiolo that's more medium than large. Say, if it's gentleman suits it's probably like a 48 long is the Barbaresco. I mean the Barolo, right? It's maybe more of a 40 or 42 that is the Nebbiolo for, in American sizing, is the Nebbiolo for Barbaresco and for Moncagata.
What's the difference in the soils and things?
Well, they're gigantically different. They're very specific content differences to the soils, which gives the flavor differences.
Okay.
And you're always looking at types of clay. It's a matter of which type of clay and which subsoil that they have, and there's a myriad of varieties that you're gonna find. Mostly, you have soils that were affected by glaciers headed north into the Alps.
Yeah. Okay.
And dragging all of these rocks behind them and dragging sort of trails of. That's why most of the bands of soil differences are north to south. You see the hills sort of run north to south. It's imagine a giant fingers dragging through the snow, and leaving behind tracks. And that's sort of the way the minerals are in the different deposits and the different soils, subsoils. But it's the general soil is types of clay.
Are the vineyards there so different from spot to spot, just like in, you know, Cote d'Ivoire?
Well, they're different in exposure. The same rules apply. Things are different in their exposure. Some are southwest, some are southeast, some have a steeper cant to the hillside. And there are always certain spots that are sort of the sweet spot on a hill to grow, or a better spot on a bit of a plain to grow. There are very few plains where grapes grow in Barolo zone, Barbaresco zone, or in Gemme, the three examples I was giving. It's almost always hills. It's almost always good exposures to the south. Most of Piemonte is coming downhill from the Alps. So for the most part, everything's oriented coming down to the south.
Are those trellised vineyards pretty much or not? Are they?
No, these are mostly set up the same way as you would see.
Ground vines?
No, these are not bush vines. They're trellised like you would see in French vines. Often the same systems that you see in Burgundy or in Bordeaux. A lot of care goes into, especially when you get to the wines where there's a tremendous amount of value, there's a whole lot of care and fuss in Barolo, Barbaresco, and some of the better appellations up north, like Gemme. So in Barbaresco, they go back to this obviously super long metaphor. In Barbaresco, instead of having that roasted black fruit and the stronger anise flavor, you get some anise, but it's maybe more licorice. You get more red fruit than black, but maybe it's dried red fruit, roasted red fruit. The spices that you get, the anise is not as strong. It's more cinnamon. It's more a little, it's a more subtle hint. It might be nutmeg or something like that. The power of the sun on those skins has not really changed the personality of the fruit as much as it has the Nebbiolo further down south. That usually it's warmer in Barolo. Usually you have thicker skin grapes there because of that. Not always, and not in the very best appellations are there giant differences like that, but generally, sure. And then go further north, and by further north, I mean it's not a 20-minute drive or 30-minute drive. It's maybe an hour of sort of fooling around and to get north to some of the better vineyards in a place like Gemme. In Gemme, you're looking at maybe a size 38. You know, in Gemme, you're looking at something very tidy. Definitely red fruit, more fresh fruit, and more floral than spice. And the roses, it's not as much roses as you see. The rose petals that are strong, like fetid rose petals in Barolo, and sort of like fresh, like tea roses that you get in Barbaresco. It's much more first bloom, much more maybe a little bit of violet, something akin to some of the things you noticed in Pinot Noir. And some of the soils are some of the oldest soils, in Gemme in particular, in wine-growing Italy, which is
That's pretty
remarkable.
Yeah.
And when you get things from just the right spots, there's a great old cooperative there with a talented winemaker called Antichi Vigneti di Cantalupo. And that's in Gemme, and they have a lot of the best vineyards there.
Can you say that again?
Antichi Vigneti di Cantalupo.
Wow.
It literally means the ancient vines of Cantalupo.
And so do you have any idea how long ago?
They've been growing since Roman times.
Gosh.
In sites there. You know,
That's incredible.
You're at the end of trade routes, and the wine that was made, think about it, it has to have enough acidity to preserve on its own because they weren't preserving things.
Sure.
You know, so that's one of the reasons, think about why Italian wine always has acidity, because Italian wine has been made for thousands, not a couple of hundred years, but thousands of years. And acidity is one of the things preserves. Alcohol is one of the things that preserves. Those two things tend to be present in those wines. And it sort of tilts the table, you know, the contents of the table. In Piemonte, think about how rich the cooking is.
Right.
You know, there's no lack of fat.
No.
All the strongest cheeses in Italy are there.
Very, right? Very good ones, yes.
And you think about those things, but then you think about what's in the cellar, and that the wine is one of the eternal things at the table. So
yeah, the food always goes hand in hand with the wine,
and the dishes actually change in some ways more often than the wines do. You can come up with a new dish in a season. You can come up with a new grape grown in a place successfully if you're fast in a couple of decades. Anyway, that's the beginning of thinking about it.
It's such a beautiful region. Love that. Love the wines. Love the terroir.
That's why it's the devil to do an Italian wine primer. So when we come back on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine, Cindy and I will hit a few more regions. We'll talk about a few of the dishes of those regions as well, a little more on Piemontese cooking. And then for our third segment, we'll definitely dive into a chef's challenge.
That'll be fun.
All of that and more on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Thank you.